Blog Talk Radio.
I'm Phil Bauermaster, and I'm pleased to welcome you to the 12th edition of the World Transformed 1.5. Hard to believe we've been doing this for almost 3 months now. We're 12 shows in to our show that bridges the gap between the original World Transformed, our special limited series that we presented in the summer of 2009, and the World Transformed 2, which is coming up beginning June 29th. And as I was happy to report on the live program Wednesday evening, we're making tremendous progress towards organizing the World Transformed 2. We've so far got 19 of the targeted 30 panelists already committed to doing the program. Promises to be a very exciting time. We'll be talking about the same topics that we've been discussing on the World Transformed 1.5, the same topics that we discussed in the original World Transformed, but we're going to be taking it in a somewhat different direction. We're going to be talking about how these transformations impact us as individuals and what we can and should be doing to leverage these transformations, to take advantage of these transformations, to truly be ready to live in a world transformed. It's going to be a terrific series, and looking forward to getting it put together, looking forward to sharing more information with all of you about it, and very much looking forward to having those shows. So tonight we're going to be talking about the world we design. That was actually our topic for last week, but we kind of strayed a bit and talked about the topics of the World Transformed. So tonight I do want to swing it back around and talk truly about what it means to be able to design our own world. I was at a graduation ceremony this morning. My oldest daughter graduated from college, very proud of her, and noted so many of the things that you see every time you see a commencement ceremony. A lot of things don't change. Pomp and circumstance plays, everyone processes in, they sit down, there's a charge to the students, there's all of these things. And the charge to the students got my attention. It was from a speaker. He is the head of a major nonprofit here in the state of Colorado, Big Brothers and Big Sisters, and gave a good, inspiring speech, the kind of go out there and make the world a better place speech that you expect to hear at a commencement, that graduates expect to hear, parents sitting in the stands expect to hear. And one of the things he said, a very heartfelt plea to these young people who are about to enter into their careers or move on to further education, was this phrase. He said, "We need you to help improve our world." And I thought, what a great challenge to give to young people. What a great challenge for all of us to take on. I mean, this is truly the call of the World Transformed. This is a restatement of a principle that we describe on Fast Forward Radio as the human imperative, which is that we want to improve the world, actually that we can't help but work on improving the world, that what humanity has been about from day one is making incremental, gradual, sometimes striking, discontinuous improvements to our circumstances, improvements to our world. Doesn't always work out, and some people think they're making improvements and are actually doing horrible things, and some people are just trying to do things that are pretty questionable. But if you look at the whole of human history, this is what people are trying to do. They're trying to improve the world. This is what drives us. We're working to make our world a better place. So the question is, what if we could start it over? So far we've always had to improve the world from where it is now, but what if we could go back and redesign the world? What if we could improve the world by making it right the first time? Well, our choice has always been to work with the world as it is. You don't get to go back and start over. But that limitation is one that may not be with us forever. So I want to talk about redesigning the world in two contexts. First, I want to talk about fixing up the world we live in from a design perspective. So we're going to talk about the world, planet Earth, the world that we know, the world that we live in, and how these design principles that I'm going to introduce might be applied there. And then we're going to talk about how they might be applied to creating new virtual worlds. Those would be worlds that we create from scratch, worlds that we create from the ground up. So here are my three design principles. I was thinking about this earlier today. I've been thinking about this for the past week. What are the major principles of design that I'd like to apply to a world if I was going to design my own world? And the three I came up with are domestication, abundance, and flexibility. So let's talk about each of these. Now, domestication is going to immediately, I think, sit badly with some people. It's not going to sound like a great idea that we would want to have a domesticated world. And I would agree that there is a scary downside, a scary potential downside to the idea of domesticating the world. But before we talk about domesticating the world we live in, let's recognize that there's a lot about the world that we would never want to change. There's a lot about the world we live in that we like, and that we don't want a design principle that would violate that. When designing a new world, we want it to be beautiful, like the world that we live in. We want it to be possessed of diverse biology, of diverse topology, diverse climate, all the wonderful things that make our planet Earth, our world, such a cool place. I don't know that we want it to be dangerous, though. That's one of the differences. We don't want the world to kill us. That's currently what the world does to us sometimes, right? It kills us with meteorological or geological events, that is to say with storms or with earthquakes or with volcanoes, or sometimes it kills us via biological agents, that is to say disease, viruses, or predators for that matter. Wouldn't it be great if the world had all the randomness, all the beauty, all the variety that I already described, without the danger? See, there's always been this distinction between the inside and the outside, and creating the inside has always been our way of redesigning the world. We create spaces inside to protect ourselves from the weather, from, well, not really volcanoes, no way to protect yourself from those, from predators, from other humans. It has been our way of creating a domesticated piece of the world. We build structures that give us shelter and that mitigate the danger that the world represents to us, because you have to be fair in recognizing that although the world is beautiful, et cetera, as I've already mentioned, it is dangerous, as I've already mentioned. And we've been dealing with that for a long time. So creating the inside, that's always been our way of redesigning the world. But a truly redesigned world, maybe there no longer would be an outside. Maybe the entire world would be inside, to the extent that it's inside of our control. Now, some people are not going to like that because we're going to lose the wildness of the world. But the world stops killing us in that case. Nobody dies randomly because of stuff the world did. To me, that seems like a fair trade-off if you can pull it off. And I think that all worlds we design will be domesticated. They will be worlds that will have that element of danger, that element of existential risk built into living in the world removed. Now, there is such a thing as dangerous worlds that we will create, virtual worlds that we will create for games, where all manner of danger goes on. Anyone who's ever played a combat game or virtually any kind of role-play game that involves shooting or that involves warfare of any kind knows that there's tremendous danger in those worlds, but it's not really real danger because you then come back out of that world and you're fine. And I think that principle will continue to apply. So whether we're talking about virtual worlds or whether we're talking about the real world, we're going to be looking at a future where the world will stop killing us. We will take control of the weather, we will take control of geological processes, and we will have sufficient control, probably through nanotechnology and biotechnology, of our environment that the kinds of dangers I've been talking about will be eliminated. Obviously, in virtual worlds, those dangers are only there if you put them in there to begin with. And if you do put them in there to make the world more random, more wild, more interesting. It'll also be curbed to the extent that it won't actually hurt the real person. So that's our first design principle. We're going to make a world that is domesticated. Just as we domesticated animals, we are going to domesticate the planet or domesticate the world in which we live. My second design principle is abundance. Now, this is an important concept related to the world transformed anyway. Obviously, we have a whole show that we'll be doing about abundance. Had a show that we did about abundance in the original world transformed, and it's something Stephen and I talk about frequently. It is a fundamental design flaw of the world we live in that it suffers shortages. So when we design a new world, this will be a world that does not suffer shortages. Our current world is always running out of stuff. And what does this lead to? This leads to suffering. It leads to deprivation. It leads to conflict. You think about the long history of wars of conquest, of one group subjugating another group because they want to get their resources. How many wars have been fought over stuff? In the book Energy Victory, Robert Zubrin, who we replayed this archive show a few weeks ago, makes the case that World War II was fought as much over oil as it was ideology. People don't think of World War II in that context. Maybe more recent wars in the Middle East they think of being over oil. But what if even World War II was over stuff as much as it was ideology? The lack of stuff creates tremendous problems. So a world designed from scratch will be one of endless abundance. In the real world, we achieve that through nanotechnology. And I won't spend a lot of time talking about the means by which that occurs. That is something that we'll go into greater detail on the show about abundance. But for those who've listened to The World Transformed before, those who've listened to Fast Forward Radio, read The Speculist, you know that our scenario around abundance has to do with the implementation of full molecular nanotechnology, has to do with the implementation of technology that enables the replication of material goods, the rapid cost-free replication of just about any material good that you can imagine, including the machines that make the replications. You have that, and you have a world of endless abundance. In virtual worlds, you don't have to go to a lot of trouble. Nothing needs to be invented other than the virtual world itself. In a virtual world, everyone is already rich. It is a land of abundance to begin with. Now, an interesting side note about abundance. It's an important principle to note that abundance applies to every resource, including land. So if we're going to design a world that offers complete abundance, it will have to do so around land, too. Because we need to recognize that disputes over land make some of the most bitter and hard-fought human conflicts. Obviously, the Palestinian and Israeli conflict comes to mind. That's a fight, a good example of a fight, long-standing, bitter fight that originates, may not be the full extent of the battle now, but originates with a fight over land. Now, in virtual worlds, fights over land are easily solved, right? Because you can have one virtual Earth with many overlapping versions of some regions. So you could have Israel, Palestine, and four or five other variations on that all sitting in the same space, quote unquote, because there isn't really no space inside the virtual world. So that globe could have different versions of the same place all sitting together. So you have one Earth with many overlapping versions. And each claimant to that particular region gets its own version of that region. Now, that'll work in the virtual world. That's going to be a lot harder to pull off in the real world. Because there's no good way currently to make two or more things occupy the same space. To do anything like the virtual world would require something like multi-dimensional engineering and architecture. You know, somehow to have two places sitting in the two different versions of the same place occupying the same space. Now, we might not have that capability for a long time. We may never get that capability, let's face it. Some other possibilities, we might have advanced geoengineering, make the world bigger and put two cloned versions of the same region side by side. We're talking about very advanced technology at that point, making the world itself bigger, the landmass of the world bigger, but certainly not as advanced as would be required to do what I said before about actually having two different versions of the same space occupy, two different versions of the same region occupy the same space. Of course, if you have highly advanced geoengineering technology, you could build multiple replicas of the entire Earth. So people wouldn't have to fight about regions within the Earth. You just go create a whole new copy of the Earth, and on that new copy, that region belongs to you, absolutely. So again, each claimant could get their own version. Of course, then you're going to have arguments about who gets the original version of the disputed region. And unless you're prepared to blow up the original Earth in favor of all these new copies, the problem still doesn't go away. And there's other variations. There's variations where the virtual world and the real world become so intertwined that when people visit this region, they have no idea what's actually going on in the real region. All they know is what they subjectively experience there. And what they subjectively experience there would be determined by the various claimants to the region, which version that they've decided to go into. So lots of wacky possibilities there. But ultimately, we can create a world where land is abundant and old boundaries serve no purpose. But at some point, this becomes a discussion of how people are designed, not how the world is designed. There's only so much we can do to solve that problem from a design the world standpoint. I feel that we might get pretty far in virtual worlds. We'll get very far in virtual worlds. We might even get farther than I've just described in the real world. But we'll still be up against a basic principle of human nature, a basic desire to win. So I'm not sure we can solve that particular problem just by designing the world. We might have to go in and talk about how society itself is designed, how people are designed. And of course, that's all a little bit beyond my scope today. Our next design principle is flexibility. Now, a few weeks back, actually probably one of the first shows we did in the World Transformed 1.5, I gave the example of George Jetson's briefcase. For those who are familiar with the Jetsons, a TV show from the 60s cartoon, George Jetson, he lived in the future. And he drove a flying car to work every day. When he arrived at work, he'd hit a button, and his flying car would turn into his briefcase. And I talked about how that briefcase might then turn into his bicycle. It might then turn into his secretary. It could become anything he needs it to be. We've had J. Storrs Hall on Fast Forward Radio numerous times, visionary around artificial intelligence and nanotechnology, talking about his concept of utility fog. This is swarms of nanorobots that nanoscale, tiny, tiny molecular scale robotic devices that can take on any of thousands or millions of shapes. The idea of utility fog is summed up in the words instant anything, because they can become anything that you want them to become. Now, what if the entire world was made of instant anything? Well, that's the great thing about virtual worlds. Virtual worlds are already made of instant anything, because they're made of electronics, they're made of electrons, they're made of information, and you can immediately shift that out. If you've worked in web design at all, if you've ever worked with web pages, there's a terrific example of how this might be brought into being that can be found there. If you take a web page and apply a different, what they call, theme to it, this can be done with cascading style sheets, it can be done with XML, there's other standards that provide this capability. But you take a web page, it's coded in HTML, there's the code, and that same page, the same basic code, can be made to look completely different, 2, 3, 4, 5 different ways at the push of a button. You apply one theme to it, and it looks this way. You apply another theme, and it looks completely different. Different colors, different pictures, different fonts, items in different places. It looks like a completely different page, but it's the same core content driving that page as the other version you saw. And you can see dozens of different versions of the exact same page. Now, imagine that same principle applied to the rooms in your house. Flip a button and wham, different walls, different furniture, different layout. Well, with something like utility fog, instant anything, the real world can be just as malleable as any virtual world. If you're familiar with the holodeck concept on Star Trek, imagine that idea applied to the whole world, and you begin to see what I'm getting at. Okay, so three core principles: domestication, abundance, and flexibility. With those three principles in place, I think we're ready to begin truly designing our own world. We'll be back on with an archive show on Monday evening. It will be Stephen Gordon and Michael Darling, a show from 2008, those two guys talking about the human brain. Great discussion with those two, and I hope you'll be able to join us for that. Wednesday evening, on the live show, we're going to be talking about practical time travel. This is one of my pet subjects, something that I've written about extensively in the past on The Speculus. We've done a couple of shows about it in the past, and we're going to spend some time talking about practical time travel. What is practical time travel? Well, tune in Wednesday night and you will find out. 1 week from tonight, we'll be back on with The World Transformed 1.5. And next week, I'm going to begin taking us through the questions that we will be giving to the panelists on The World Transformed 1.5, on The World Transformed 2. So we'll be looking at what they'll be talking about. I'm sure I'll also have an update around who our panelists are and the progress that we're making towards that program. Well, I hope you'll be able to join us for all of these upcoming shows. And until next time, live to see it.